This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this Latin American edition of the program, Political Turmoil in Bolivia. Hello again, I'm Carol Castillo. With almost 14 years as president under his belt, Evo Morales was one of the longest-serving leaders in Latin America and his country's first indigenous leader. After a controversial decision by the Constitutional Court to scrap presidential term limits, Mr. Morales ran for a fourth consecutive term in office in October 2019. But the result of the October 20th election was disputed, and Mr. Morales' main rival, Carlos Mesa, cried foul, leading to weeks of unrest across Bolivia. Eventually, international election monitors called for the result to be annulled, and on November 10, Mr. Morales resigned and left Bolivia for Mexico in what he now calls a coup. Well, with us to discuss the significance and regional implications of political turmoil in Bolivia are two distinguished regional analysts. Eric Farnsworth is vice president of the Council of the Americas and the Americas Society, and that's a leading voice on Western Hemisphere affairs here in Washington. And Eric Langer, he's professor of history at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. He teaches courses about Latin American civilization, including resistance and rebellion in the Andean world and Indians and the state in Latin America. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Well, Eric Farnsworth, on our periodic Latin American edition, let me turn to you first. We're seeing sort of a wave of protests, not just in Bolivia and in Chile. I'd like you to talk about the kinds of clashes we're seeing around the continent, including even in Ecuador and other places. Do you see a pattern among them?
Well, thanks for having me back, Carol. You know, each circumstance is different. Each country is unique and independent and sovereign, of course, and the protests arise for different reasons. But we do see some similarities. And broadly speaking, this is an oversimplification, but broadly speaking, we see discontent because of unmet expectations across particularly South America. And we can speculate as to why, but one of the explanations surely is the fact that South America is a commodities exporting region of the world. For many years at the beginning of this century, commodities prices were quite high, and there was a lot of money that was available to South Americans, and many people were coming out of the lower classes into the middle classes. Their expectations were rising for health care and education, infrastructure, better jobs. And now that commodities prices have gotten much lower, there's less money. Austerity has been implemented across a number of countries, but the expectations for a better life remain high, and governments from the left and the right both have not been able to satisfy those expectations. So people are frustrated. They're taking it out against the elites, and they're looking for change. It's not necessarily that they want to overthrow what's there, but they do want to make what's there work much better for them.
So turning to you, Eric Langer, a lot of similarities, but some differences, discontent and unmet expectations. How do you see these widespread protests?
I have to agree with Eric Farnsworth. My, as they say in Spanish, tocayo means we have the same first names. And so that's going to be hard in this program. But thank you, first of all, for having me on. But yes, I think that's something that's really important, that unmet expectations. But there are certain dynamics that are different. One is, for example, the case of Bolivia, which I know we're going to talk about a little bit more later, is mainly political, in fact. And the economic, I think, is secondary. And the other is the economic is much more important. Say in Chile, for example, there was a hike of a minor amount in the ticket for a subway. And it was just a few cents. And some high school students went over the barriers without paying. And then suddenly there was a viral video and suddenly everybody protested. And nobody thought that that was going to happen because in Chile, it seemed like everything was going well and things like that. But in fact, there is quite a lot of inequality in places like Chile. And so many people see this as kind of one more thing that shows that they are not benefiting as much as some of the more wealthier people in that country. And so that's really what happened there. So that's much more economic in that sense in Bolivia, where it really had to do with fraudulent elections and all that, as you already started to explain.
And that's what we're going to go to now, Eric Farnsworth, Bolivia. Let's start with the series of events that led to the resignation of Evo Morales. Do you see his removal as a sort of coup, as he characterizes it? What's at the heart of this political unrest that continues to go on despite his resignation, or perhaps as a result of it?
Well, the word coup in the Latin American context is very loaded, and it's got a lot of history, and we have to be really careful when we start to use words like that. I think there's a lot going on here that we have to be aware of. The first is that President Morales had instituted a referendum process in 2016 to allow him to run again for the presidency, which was not a constitutionally allowed ability to do. He lost that referendum, and then he got the Supreme Court of Bolivia to give him a friendly decision to allow him to run, indeed, because to not do so would be a violation of his human rights. This is new jurisprudence, which we haven't seen anywhere else in the world. But nonetheless, taking that favorable court decision, he then ran for re-election. And as you said, despite all of the ability of the state to game the system, if you will, in terms of the electoral process and all of these things, it was still a result that was not favorable to him, as the OAS and others have said. And so the street got angry and people began to protest. And the military essentially said, we can't guarantee the safety and we're not going to put down the protests in support of you. So it's best if you leave the country. And so that's what indeed he decided to do with the help of the Mexican government, where he now resides. You know, this is the beginning of probably an extended process, because Bolivia is a very polarized society. And they do need to have a clarifying election here, which the international community has clearly called for. And the interim president has said that her main goal is to have that election. And that's something that she indeed needs to do. We need to see a date, and we need to see some specific actions toward an election that would be free and fair to clarify this and get Bolivia out of what could be a deteriorating situation.
Indeed. Turning to you, Eric Langer, for your interpretation of these events that led to Evo Morales' resignation, and to what extent, you know, is he overstepping his bounds and, in a sense, the catalyst for all this chaos?
Well, it's not quite clear exactly how much of a catalyst he is. He is still speaking for Mexico, which presumably is not allowed in international law. You're supposed to, as a political refugee, you should be quiet and not say anything unless you want to go back to the country, which he clearly cannot. I think it's a little bit more complicated, actually, in the sense that what occurred was that there were 23 hours between the fast count and then they simply stopped it. And then suddenly after 23 hours, miraculously, Evo Morales had won. Now, the OAS did an audit on that and showed that, in fact, they plugged the electoral computers to an outside server, which immediately means that the election isn't safe, and who knows what happened, but that by itself already means that the election is not valid. And so with many days of protests where Santa Cruz, the largest city, for example, went into a strike, and then all the other departments as well, including actually his indigenous organization, said, no, you have to go. And so my sense is that actually the general who suggested, because that's actually within the constitutional mandate that the chief of staff of the military can suggest things to the president, said, suggest that he should step down, which he did very clearly to kind of stay legal in that sense, so he wouldn't be accused of being a leader of a coup. And by the way, not a single soldier came out at that particular point. I think was actually doing a favor for Evo Morales, because General Caniman is actually a supporter of Evo Morales. But because it was simply unsustainable at that point for Morales to remain, by having the military suggest that he leave, he could then claim it was a coup and thus mobilize his followers. And so that seems to be the case. It's never quite clear what exactly happened, but, you know, as you know, these things are always fuzzy in the fog of electoral combat in this case. But it's quite clear that electoral fraud occurred and that Evo Morales and his party was in charge of the election, and thus it was, if you will, their fault. Now, what occurred afterwards, in fact, I think the original sin, if you will, was Evo Morales's. And what has occurred since then is really a follow-up of what he did initially, because I think we cannot ignore that, in fact, there was electoral fraud. And I think that has been well proven by the OAS, actually by the Bolivian University as well. And there was one other organization, I don't remember what it is, which also asserted that these elections were not fair and were not free, that there was fraud there.
And of course, he wanted another term after having served four terms.
He wants to remain in power for the rest of his life.
Right. This is not a democratic path.
This was a semi-authoritarian regime. In other words, the opponents of the regime were accused of some kind of violation, corruption or something like that, and basically told, you go to jail. And so most of them fled, because if they now return, they would have to go to jail. And so in fact, what he did systematically is to eliminate all opposition figures and also maintain the opposition as divided as possible. Even Carlos Mesa, who was the person in second, also was about to be thrown in jail, but then he said that he would help Bolivia try to get back access to the Pacific Ocean. And as a result, Evo Morales, who wanted that, you know, that would have been historic if Bolivia had achieved that, and so let Carlos Mesa work on that and not throw him in jail.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Castillo. My guests are Eric Farnsworth, he's Vice President of the Council of the Americas and the Americas Society, and Eric Langer, from whom you just heard. He's Professor of History at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. We're discussing the significance and implications of the political turmoil in Bolivia. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. And a new VOA English app for both Android and Apple devices has been developed. We hope you will download and use them. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Ezechi Nkwoma from Lagos, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our discussion about Bolivia. So back to you, Eric Farnsworth. I'd like you to talk a little bit about the tenure of Evo Morales, the significance of him being the first indigenous president of the country. Why is that so significant? And, you know, his socialist policies, were they positive, negative for the country in your view?
I think he has certainly a mixed legacy, but broadly positive in many ways. As you alluded, he was the first president elected of an indigenous background. That matters because Bolivia has a huge percentage of population that's indigenous background, which hasn't always, you know, enjoyed the fruits of democracy or economic growth, has been an oppressed minority, or in Bolivia, a majority, actually, of citizens. And this is something that Morales brought into the public space and gave voice to, and I think that there's something there that will be lasting in a positive way from Bolivia. He also presided over a period of economic growth. Certainly that was, again, related to commodities, the export of mining and natural gas and things like that. But he was there, and some of the benefits of that growth were distributed throughout society. And so that's certainly something I think that can also be put in the positive side of the ledger. The problem is he didn't really know when to leave. I mean, he became too comfortable in power, and he began to take steps that would ensure that he would remain in power. And the fact that the people were broadly beginning to turn against him. Now, maybe that's just because he stayed in office too long. Every leader who's been around for a long time begins to lose support. But it's ironic that had he not gone through this process, arguably we'd be having a totally different conversation about the legacy of Evo Morales. And broadly speaking, it would probably be fairly positive.
Would you agree, broadly speaking, Eric Langer, that it was positive?
Yes, I think he did bring in much of the indigenous population politically and economically in ways that had not occurred before. But let me put on my hat as a historian for a minute. And first of all, he's not the first indigenous president. He says he is, but he wasn't. It's actually Andrés Santa Cruz Cala Umana, who was the, I think, third president of Bolivia, who remained in power for 10 years, was the best presidents of Bolivia all the way back from 1829 to 1839. You see, this is why being a historian helps.
Indeed. You need to advise all the press reports.
I know, because they don't know, and you know, but he was clearly Aymara as well. Now, what also is the case is that, of course, Bolivia had a social revolution in 1952, and in fact did tremendous things to change things around, a radical agrarian reform in which the workers on the farms got the lands, in which the mining industry was nationalized, in which universal suffrage was given and things like that. This is something that Morales in particular tries to ignore, because he's saying, no, the original sin is all the way back from the conquest, and we can't worry about anything, and I'm really the savior of everything else. And I, as a historian, say, no, 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 it's not really that way. There's much, much more complicated than that. But obviously, it's not in his political interest to do so. But certainly, to get back to your question, yes, I think, and I actually had told this to some of Evo Morales's advisors. I don't know him personally, but I know many of the people surrounding him, that, you know, he has a legacy. He needs to just let go. If he had had this legacy, then he would be fine. Why are you running again for office? This is not smart.
It's not as if there weren't alternatives, correct?
Well, the thing is, for example, he could have been the senior statesman and still pulled the strings because his party has tremendous amount of support, particularly in the countryside. But the other thing is with Evo Morales, as with actually Hugo Chavez, for example, or with Daniel Ortega, he made sure that there was nobody there who could follow him. In other words, he didn't bring up the next generation, but tried to make himself indispensable. And I think that is part of his legacy as well. And that's why he thought he had to be in charge all the time, because he felt that the only time that social justice would be served, et cetera, is because he's in power. And in fact, to a certain extent, he's right, but maybe for the wrong reasons.
Right. Well, now we're dealing with protests. A lot of deaths have occurred as a result of violent protests. Eric Farnsworth, and you earlier mentioned there's an interim leader, Jeanine Añez. She's a 50-year-old, more conservative senator. She stepped in last week after his resignation. Is her ascension to that post in line with the constitutional guidelines? And what about these protests? There's a lot of violence, saying that the security forces are behind it. How do you characterize these protests? Who's coming out to the streets?
Well, her ascension does appear to be in the line of secession, according to the Bolivian constitution, with an important question about a legislative quorum that did not exist when she declared herself the interim president. So that's an issue that the Bolivian court system will likely have to work out. But the bigger story here is that she has said, upon taking the presidential sash, that her one goal was to get Bolivia to the elections that are clearly called for under the Constitution. And that's something that I think the international community should also help her work toward. Because again, as somebody who has not been elected into that position, who does not have the mandate to fulfill that role, somebody has to run an election free and fair and be elected by the people of Bolivia and carry on. And that is ultimately, in my view, how you can begin to heal, begin to resolve a very polarized society. And we shouldn't forget, Bolivia is polarized not just politically, but socioeconomically, racially, geographically. It's a very polarized society. So her role, in my view, should be to bring the country together so that it can run a free and fair election. The problem is that to the extent now that people continue to protest and some are being killed, it's very, very tragic. The military is using force against Bolivian people. This is further amplifying some of the risk of being in the streets, but it's also further polarizing the country, and it's not calming things down. It's actually making things more difficult to resolve. So one would hope that calmer heads would prevail, but passions have certainly been unleashed in Bolivia, and it's going to take some real statespeople to help resolve a very difficult situation.
Passions certainly have been unleashed, Eric Langer. How do you see these protests? Do you see any kind of ethno-racial undertones in terms of who's out on the streets? Are they Evo Morales protesters, for the most part, wanting to have him return? Are they those who oppose? And are you confident that Jeanine Añez is capable to shepherd the country toward the elections that need to take place, new elections?
We don't know yet. It doesn't look very good right now. And I'd say a pox on all houses at this point, because clearly so many mistakes have been made. But as Eric Farnsworth said, for example, the MAS, which is the party of Evo Morales, basically retreated completely from the government. Everybody renounced their position, including all the legislators. And now they said, well, we don't have a quorum, and so now you can't be president. But they tried to leave a vacuum of power. And this they did deliberately so that then it would give an excuse for Evo Morales to return. My sense is that Evo Morales returns, and he wants to do so, he will institute a dictatorship and never leave again, kind of on the Chavez model after the 2002 coup. So that's something. But on the other hand, what Añez has done is really unleashed the most conservative sectors in society and permitted, for example, the military to use force without being accused in court for that. That's actually what General Caliman had asked Evo Morales to do. Evo Morales said, no, you can't do that. But now Áñez has said that, yes, you can do that. And they are using as much force as they want. Now, of course, the other thing is that after almost 14 years of tremendous social and political change, some of the elements in the Áñez government are trying to reverse some of that change. And I don't think that that's appropriate for a caretaker government. That's really something that should be done in the election. Of course, what it has done is rather than pacify the country. Well, you don't pacify the country by killing people. You pacify the country by starting a dialogue. What do we do next? How do we get from here to there? What is the role of Evo Morales? What is the role of MAS, which still constitutes a huge proportion of the population? You can't just repress people.
So Eric Farnsworth, would you agree with Eric Langer that Morales' proposal that he come back and finish, you know, the last few months of his term, and then together with the opposition, name a new electoral authority and oversee a fresh vote to choose a new leader, is pretty much dead on arrival?
Well, I don't think it's a helpful suggestion, that's for sure. It's certainly not going to calm things. It would be like putting gasoline on a burning fire already. And if the interest is to get Bolivia to a place where the politics begins to work and the economy begins to grow, then I think it's probably best if the Bolivian people move on and go to the next step and don't try to bring back a president who has already resigned and who has been credibly accused of trying to stay in power through a fraudulent election. And I think it's interesting in terms of the indigenous. It's not a uniform bloc in support of Evo Morales. And I think we are also beginning to see divergences within his own party, the MAS. Not every MAS member now is fully supportive of Evo Morales. There are a number who are looking for an alternative to go forward for their own reasons, for the health and well-being of the party, and for the good of the country.
So what are other options, in your view, to break this impasse? Does the Organization of American States have a role or other regional groups?
I think the OAS has already played a very important role in terms of quite clearly showing that the electoral fraud did exist and calling for new elections. I think the solution has to be a Bolivian solution. I think the international community can come alongside the actors in Bolivia and guide and show and offer suggestions and best practices. But at the end of the day, Bolivians themselves will have to carry it out. But I continue to suggest that the end game here really has to be a new election.
Well, you get the last word, Eric Langer, talking about what other options exist to break this impasse, the role of OAS, and actually the implications if things don't go well, the importance of Bolivia and any kind of knock-on effects on the continent.
Yes, I think Bolivia is crucial. It's in the center of South America. It is the poorest country in South America, but nevertheless, it's absolutely crucial because it's right in the middle and it's right next to all the other countries. And yes, I agree completely with Eric Farnsworth that what is absolutely crucial is that Bolivians themselves need to sit down and talk to each other, stop yelling at each other, stop shooting at each other, and start doing that. My sense is that they probably will, but the problem is right now that Evo Morales from Mexico is stoking the fires. He's saying, yes, calm, calm, calm. But on the other hand, he's saying, well, but I really want to return and things like that. He's giving all kinds of equivocal signals, and that's not really good. The one government that should do something about all of this is actually the Mexican government. It should say, Mr. Morales, I'm sorry, you're in political asylum, and you should better be quiet right now and let people work things out because you have renounced, and we're happy to have you here, but that's it. You are not a player anymore.
Well, we shall certainly be following the events in Bolivia and bring them to you as they develop. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Eric Farnsworth, Vice President of the America Society and Council of the Americas, and Eric Langer, Professor of History at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. Gentlemen, gracias. Thank you for coming in and sharing your keen insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Kelvin Fowler. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.